Amsterdam FM presenteert Springvossen.
Komende uur kunt u luisteren naar een nieuwe aflevering van Springvossen. Het komende gesprek gaat plaatsvinden in het Engels. So, I'm changing languages now. Winston Ruff, thank you for having this conversation with me.
This is very nice for me as well, thank you.
You're having a show at Slewe Gallery, Colored Grids.
Colored Grids, exactly.
And that will be up on show until the 18th of May. For me, and this was a first time that I saw your work.
Yes.
And that was really nice event, seeing it, because it gave me all smiles. Mm-hmm. So a really nice energy.
Well, I thought for myself that the fact that you received that kind of energy from my work was a real pleasure for me, because I look for that myself in my work.
So, what you show here are, I don't know exactly the numbers, but let's say some 10 large paintings on paper.
10 of them, yes.
And two smaller ones.
Two smaller ones, exactly.
In the cabinet, what yes. I always call the cabinet of the, mm-hmm. the gallery. And these are on, let's say, the outer walls.
Yes.
So, when you enter the gallery, on the right-hand side, there's the first one, and then there's a small movement of wall, mm-hmm. and then the show opens up. And so lined on these outer walls are these works on paper, and on the inner walls, in large niches,
yes.
are two paintings on panel.
Yes, yeah.
They are not just different material, but they also have a different presence.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about that, no doubt.
Yes.
Do you make often works on paper?
It's something I go to now and then that I take a great pleasure in. It's an ease for me to put a sheet of paper down on the table and to begin painting on it. And I like to mark off the measurements and then create lines and then go over the lines over and over as I weave the grid onto the paper. And as it moves across each line, the brush flows more freely and it picks up speed, and the depth of the color and the light coming out of the color in the line increases. And so that's the pleasure that I find in that.
Yeah. There's an intrinsic paradox in your work. So that would be nice to state that in the beginning, because that was something new to me, that there's, let's say, a grid on a field.
Mm-hmm.
The grid contains color. At first sight, you always think to identify one color and then on the plane. Mm. And then quite soon, the painting comes alive. Comes alive because, just like the head of a male duck, it's starting to change colors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There you see an incredible depth of color appearing. But the paradoxical, what I referred to just now, is the fact that the color plane is the grid and not the field. As you experience it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I go back in your work, when was the first time that you started working in such a way?
With the lines and with grids, I would think it would go back to around the 1980s, middle, later 1980s into the 90s, and began exploring it first with pastel, and then also on prepared paper, which was painted with a slight grit on it so that the pastel could flow easily onto the surface and be held there in a nice tight grip with the surface, the color. I liked the pastel because of the intensity of the color.
Would that be the structure of the paper or something that you added?
Something I added, which was painted onto it. I mean, if you notice on the one grid in the show, the dark one, the black one, that painting, that surface has been painted. And I painted that surface, that black, and it has a grit in it because I add a certain amount of silica to the pigment, and so that gives it a more grainy texture, which grips and holds the pastel.
Yeah.
But after a time, I began to just turn directly to the raw paper, and my preference for the paper is Reeves BFK, a French-made paper. And I like the very large sheets because it's 300 grams per square inch, and so that gives it a certain weight.
And almost body.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got a beautiful whiteness to it that I like. And I think what you mentioned about the ground and the grid and this transfer, the lines send off their color into the ground, and so it almost... The green lines of the green grid make the paper appear almost, the whole thing is infused with this green, this greenness. And I find that pretty interesting, that the color is shed out into the space around it, and within the drawing and within, even in paintings that utilize the grid.
Yeah, so it makes me even think that these paintings are alive.
Oh, definitely.
With the light.
My search is always to find energy in the work, not something that is just lying there, but something that's alive. The lines, as I paint over them again and again and again, each line, the depth sinks in, the speed of the brush across the surface picks up, but there's something else that happens as it begins to surface, and that surface has the ability to reflect and to refract color. So it's alive in the sense that you can get a reflected light back at you. If you have a strong light behind you, it'll reflect directly to you. It will reach out to you. And if you stand off to the side, you get a refraction. And oftentimes that refraction is a shift to another color.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But now we have the result. I see it here. You know how to make that, and you are in an unending search to find more ways of expressing
absolutely
these qualities. But it's something that at a certain point you met, or you were searching, you didn't know. So were your first grids also this dynamic?
No, they became more and more so as I researched. And it's so much for me is about mixing. I like to work with pure pigments and mixing them little by little, you know, even line by line, you know. And that's been the research that I've done, you know, in a really tactile way in the studio, working directly on the paper and finding out what certain pigments can do and how they can surface on the paper and create this light that gives the whole body of the drawing energy.
Yeah, because there's this other paradox that you are this painter who works with orthogonal grids, and that has a certain hardness to it when you think of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A plane with a strict grid on it.
Yeah.
You open up the grids in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on the other side, sometimes on the, because you don't always place it in the center so that it grips the paper. Sometimes you open it up.
Yeah.
So there's different ways. of, let's say, opening up the grid and making it less rigid.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about grids on a plane, you think of rigidity in mm-hmm. a certain way. And mm-hmm. of course, we know Mondrian, and Mondrian found ways to open it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think of these gray paintings with the crossings and the irregularities. And you don't add these irregularities in that sense. So you don't use different width of line in one painting. But there's this color that floods over this grid and out of this grid,
mm-hmm.
which makes it, as I said already, very lively and in a way that you can't wrap your mind around it. You mm-hmm. can't hold it. You can't control it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's color for you. And that's how you, Winston Ruth, works with color.
Mm-hmm.
But you said just now that you mix your own pigments.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at a description under a photo of your work, it says pigments mm-hmm. from this German manufacturer.
Kramer
yes. pigments, so really specific.
Mm-hmm.
And polyurethane dispersion.
Yes.
So is it then that you just mix the pigments with water and then add polyurethane dispersion, whatever that may be, because
it's basically a water-based binder that Kramer does sell, and I've used for years, and I find it incredibly useful because it binds and it releases at the same time. It releases the color and it binds it together, and it doesn't take much. And when I'm mixing, like for lines, it's very small amounts at a time, and I may use the same mixes or nearly the same, but I'm not looking for sameness so much as more just a kind of consistency that allows for why some lines are lighter than others. Maybe I haven't gone over that line as many times as the other, so then you begin to get this play within the lines of, and they start to form in groups, and you get squares that come together in larger parts within the drawing, and then they evaporate into other squares, and so there's much more activity visual. And
exactly, there's an enormous visual dynamic looking at a painting
mm-hmm.
by your hand. So there's this grid color field.
Yeah.
And there's, as you said just now, this new organization that your head is opening up to.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all in different layers of time,
mm-hmm.
standing
sure.
before a painting. Even when you're not moving,
yeah.
that's already happening. So some of the events when you're watching optic. So you, on the crossings, you have these really dynamic light points
yes.
that are just moving about as if the painting is electrified.
Mm-hmm. They pop out.
It's incredible.
Yeah, because the overlap creates a density and a certain kind of reflection that is different from the line itself and where they cross each other.
And it's also perhaps the direction, and it's...
It's just that yeah. little square where yeah. they overlap, and those little squares yeah. have this quality of being able to really sort of express themselves on their own.
Yeah, which makes it almost like a sort of neon show. but when you distance yourself a bit from the painting, that recedes,
yes.
this optic effect, and then your eyes open up to the possibility of seeing different structures and figures, let's mm-hmm. say, as you said,
yes.
different
yes.
different groupings.
Exactly, yeah.
And there also appears, so there's one that's the only strict grid I think, in the paper works. Strict mm-hmm. as in that it's really confined within the paper
and
surface.
And a very dense grid, yes.
And very dense grid. And there you see, after a certain time, like 2-3 meters away from the painting, this depth, as if it's really a physical weft mm-hmm. of lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This containing it in the outer border like that does kind of hold it in.
Exactly.
And I like this, being able to either open up all the edges so that the grid just sort of opens to the outside. And in some of them, I'll close off one half, top and one side, and open up the side and bottom. And so all these different variables with the grid, just where you stop a line, you know, at, if you bring it to the lower edge or to the side or to the top, and it just goes there and it contains itself right at the edge, that gives the grid a different feeling.
It also sometimes the horizontal rectangulars mm-hmm. and sometimes the squares. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference in density, as you said just now.
Yeah. Well, I love this idea that the grid has so many variables. I mean, it's endless, I think. You know, it could be the squares. I call them my 2-inch grids, 2-inch squares, but some of them have more horizontals than verticals, or more verticals than horizontals, and so it becomes endless. It's a real pleasure, and I would say that when I'm really working well in these grids, they take on a beautiful effortlessness within them, and that's when it really, really hits me. That's when I really strike it, and it's good, you know. I like to refer to it. It's the effortless joy of grace, and that's the really sweet spot.
Nice. Yeah. You have a few rules which you use working.
Mm-hmm.
Are your grids like certain dimensions?
Yes.
Always?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I try to keep the lines equidistant from each other, by and large. Yeah. If you have one... Sometimes I learned when I turned the paper around to work on other lines closer to me, that I'd miss exactly where the line touched the point that was the measure. And so suddenly it would be a little bit further from the other. And so then it kind of threw the whole thing off. So that was something I learned to really try to control. But it's quite simple to do that once you understand completely.
Yeah. Try to control, but at the same time, you, as I understood, use a ruler and paint with a free hand
mm-hmm.
the lines.
Yes.
That's quite incredible because they're so sharp, the lines.
Well, that's what builds up by going over them again and again. Yeah. In the very beginning, right on the dry paper, sometimes I don't even get the line to go all the way across it before it runs out. There's not much in the brush itself, because if you load up the brush, then you're going to get a little, it'll squish over the side, and then it becomes, you know, a different kind of speed, and I want it to be clear. So, and as it builds up, and it's a very, very fine brush, very narrow brush, that has been worked down to almost a nub, and so that it can be really, it can really flow and keep itself within the line, and that's the way I work.
Yeah. So, do you prepare a palette for a painting? Do you think of a plan for the evolution of your palette within a painting? Or do you decide that as you go along?
I do both. I mean, sometimes I change direction, change the color. Start out one way and then add a different color over it, and then take that color over and over and over the line, and it changes it. And sometimes I mingle two colors together in one grid, and or sometimes more. Just for fun. Just to see what happens. You know, it's not a rigid beginning. It's more of a sort of exploration and just try things.
Yeah. That's what color is about, isn't it? You never know color,
and that's the beauty of it. Exactly. You know, you find it. You don't begin with it. You find it.
Yeah. But that's something that often with artists is something that develops in time.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely you see young artists exploring color in that way. How was that with you?
I started a long time ago. When I started working with pastels, I think that was going over and over with color, over color, over color. And I think the intensity that a pastel would bring, I was actually working with them directly on a wall in front of me, but a lot of the pastel would end up on the floor, the dust. And so in the end, and they were so delicate, in the end it just became evident to me that pastel was not the way to go, that, you know, finding ways to, you know, explore these things with paint and painting directly. And then because of the way I work, it has to be on the table that I work directly. So, and yes, as you say, I use a straight edge that I float just a little bit above the paper, using little pads at either end so that nothing can creep under it. And so that gives me the freedom to work the line and keep it within itself and, you know, bring it up. We were talking about surprises. So when I had pretty much curated the 10 drawings I was going to send here, I found a box in my studio that was in storage. And it was the box that I had packed when I left New York City 20 years earlier, and I hadn't looked inside. So I decided, well, I wonder what's in there, because it said drawings on it. So I opened up this box and I discovered some grids that I had packed from my studio in Manhattan all those years ago to bring to, you know, my new home in Beacon. And one of those drawings, I thought this would be a perfect one to add to the show. So there's one in the show which has multicolors in the grid. And that's the one that I discovered, which I had forgotten about. And that was kind of a nice discovery. So I thought I have to add this one. And so it has reds and blues. And you can see how the blues were painted over the reds in several ways. And so it's got a different charge to it. And it also comes from another time.
Yeah. So it's, you see, let's say, this capacity of color to change, mm-hmm. and to radiate and disperse is really immediately evident,
mm-hmm.
in this work.
Yeah.
And with the others, you need, let's say, identify, grid, color,
mm-hmm.
pause, and then mm-hmm. it opens up. And with this one, it's immediately there.
Yeah.
It's
it surprises you.
Yeah. it's the extrovert in the family.
Yes, exactly.
Something like that.
And that it came from this this discovery. And as I have a little drawing studio next to my larger studio in Beacon where I work. And so I had it lined with all my drawings. But there were several other grid drawings in this box that I discovered. So it was very nice to sort of pin them up on the wall in my studio after I had emptied it out of the other drawings and have some more new grids that were old grids, but still new to me.
How was that? This finding old work suddenly.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It's like a discovery. And then you say, oh, I remember that. You know, I remember that because that was a time past.
So when I saw the work that you're referring to now, I thought, oh, perhaps this is what the other grids look like in a certain phase.
Well, there was that time
when
I was trying different things, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that when you work through them. Mm-hmm. They get, let's say, more uniform mm-hmm. in first appearance.
Yes.
And so that's how I read it the first time. And so I didn't know the story that this was an older grid.
That's a good reading, I would say, because I think that that's true. There were two other grids that I hung in the wall and did not send, which were very unique, too, to this later group of grids. And at first I said, yeah. And then after a while, looking at it, I said, ah, nice. This really does talk to me about another way of working that came, preceded where I am now.
Yeah.
But there was one drawing that was very clearly connected to the grids are in the show that have the multiple horizontal lines with a fewer vertical lines in them. So that was surprised me. Wow, that's directly connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the seeds were there.
And suddenly they find themselves in the same show.
Yeah.
Do you see in this older work mm-hmm. that you changed your ways? The philosophy is the same, but do you see in the practical sense that you change technique or mixing colors?
Yes, that's an interesting question, because I think in the practical sense, the change is in the feel of it. The change is how it feels to me when I'm painting it. I mean, there's a certain number of things kind of come together in the consistency of the colored grids in the show. Using primarily either really deep dark colors or certain brighter, more recognized greens or blues or, you know, kind of reds, red-orange. But earlier there was more multiple colors, and the lines in this one multicolored grid, you notice the lines are heavier. Mm-hmm. They're thicker. And I think that was something that was happening more readily and back then. And over time, the brushes kind of reduced the line for me. And I like the speed and I like the feel of these lines becoming tighter and tighter and faster. Yeah.
And also, in doing so, enlarging the paradox of the grid representing itself as a color field
yes.
as well, because the lines get finer,
yeah.
but their force of dispersion...
Yeah, finer and more intense.
...is intensified.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you would think, rationally, would be the other way around.
Yeah.
The thicker the line, the more plain it gets.
Yeah.
But in a certain way, it's, let's say, perhaps the stacking of colors and the sharpness of the line, mm-hmm. which makes it more pronounced mm-hmm. as a drawing, mm-hmm. but also as a possible, almost immaterial, color field. Immaterial because you see the colors coming loose from the grid, mm-hmm. from the disegno, from the drawing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, the color radiates out of the lines.
Yeah,
you know, the light.
Yeah. And the colors made me radiate with a smile. I was really stupefied by that. That's something that happens.
Yeah.
That you are filled with gladness on seeing and experiencing paintings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a historic moment in my life that replicates that very experience, and it was I think around 1971 or two, and I was new to New York City, and I went to the Robert Elkon Gallery uptown New York to see a show of Agnes Martin, and there was a row of these exquisitely beautiful tiny grids, you know, on paper. And I was just transfixed by them. I just went down the row and then came back and forth and back and forth. And I just couldn't believe my eyes. They were so incredible. Even Robert Elkon, who was there, noticed I was looking so intensely at these grids, came up and commented on that. And I just told him, I said, I can't believe this. He offered to sell them to me for what was, what when I think back, was almost nothing. But I didn't have any money, but they stayed with me my whole life.
Do you recall what especially struck you in these works on paper by Agnes Martin?
The delicacy of them, the strength of them, the contained energy, it all spoke to me. I mean, they were just, and the beauty, they were just intensely beautiful. They made me smile in a way that I had not really felt before. They stay with me. So when COVID hit all of us, I went early to my house in Maine to get away from, to social distance by the acre, because we live on 10 acres of land, and so I could really be away from people, and I thought it's safe. And I took with me a lot of special papers that I had saved over the years, handmade papers, and I decided to do a pencil and ink grid every day. And I worked on them one after another, delicate little things. And I kept in mind that experience of the Agnes Martin grids that were, well, 50 years earlier. And so it was my little homage to...
That's nice. But you saw something there and then in 1971 in that gallery that spoke to you personally.
Absolutely.
And that you were trying, perhaps, to look for through your own work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's nice that, like, decades later,
it is absolutely
that you come back to this first light of Agnes Martin.
I think that has something to do with, as the many years that I traveled through my work. And so you reflect on your life as you get older, and that reflection really is very clear for me, and that particular part of it was a real sort of a reawakening of some kind, and it was beautiful, beautiful. So I just opened myself up to these small drawings, and they took off in their own way, which was, I mean, it wasn't to do something like I'd seen, but they just took off, and they were all delicate, all small, and quite beautiful, I thought, and on these very interesting papers that no longer exist, handmade papers from times past that, I could just work directly on, that I'd saved forever, and so that was fun.
So, and was that a one-off? So you're not used to making work with ink on paper?
All my life I've done on grid paper. I've done what I call my desktop drawings. So it's sort of a way of just exploring different ways of drawing. And it was just an ink, and usually an ink with a little bit of a ruler to get straight lines, and I would draw. And I have thousands of them, you know. But these were different because they were, distinctly drawings, each one. And sometimes with just really hard pencil, get the faint lines and then going over it a few times, but trying to keep it as simple and delicate as possible and as open. And so as opposed to the painted lines, which do take on this charge, I mean, these just sort of rested right there in a very beautiful way.
Yeah, lying on the paper.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to the show here in Slewa Gallery, we spoke up till now about the works on paper that line the outside walls, which is, let's say, a sort of discrete fireworks. Mm-hmm. Because it's so lively once it opens up, and as a sort of point of gravity in the show,
mm-hmm.
back to back,
mm-hmm.
there are two paintings.
Yes.
Facing these outside walls,
mm-hmm.
and these works on these outside walls. And they have a sort of authoritative calm to them.
They have a grounding.
Exactly.
About them. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So that's quite nice.
Yeah. So the one is a square with a black painted board.
Yeah.
And a large grid consisting of squares, ton sur ton, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is portrait shaped,
mm-hmm.
longish, almost like a window,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with an open grid.
Yeah.
Open, let's say that it's not delimited on the edges.
Yeah, it has only two verticals.
Yeah.
So it gives itself this kind of placement. And then the lines open out to the sides, and they're very faint, and they have different faint color in them, but it's not the same kind of, you know, deep line. It's more of a faint line that hangs a little bit below the surface almost.
And, yeah.
And the two verticals are very strong and very powerful and very deep and very like that.
Yeah, and there's different colors. There's a certain charcoal blackness in them, but also
gold.
Gold and bronze.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes by, and I think it was when I was working on that painting, I would paint those lines, and then I would set it aside and I'd look at it and I'd say, let's try deepening them. So I would do that. And finally, they found the depth that they needed to have. And we should go back to the square, make sure that we mentioned that it's a rich red.
I was wanting to mention that the title of this work that you mentioned just now, the painting, it's on die bond
panel, yes,
mounted die bond, on, so aluminium, yeah. And mounted on wood.
Yes, mounted on a wood.
Yeah, and the title is Sounding.
Sounding, yes, yes, and yeah, that was my acknowledgement to Peter. Oh no, sorry, John. John Snyder,
the pianist.
Yeah. Because sounding is a term that a new music composer that I knew and know who used that a lot. So I thought that would be a nice acknowledgement to John.
Nice, because a sounding is also like sort of measuring, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
sounding out things.
Yeah. And I thought it fit the painting quite well, the title.
Yeah, wonderful. So the other painting on the other side, mm-hmm. in the first room of the gallery, is called Red Square, which is...
describes itself.
It describes itself, exactly. But I saw it just now without the artificial light.
Uh-huh.
So there's a sort of penumbrum in the gallery now. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the black recedes and the red square is really sitting on top as a relief,
mm-hmm.
which was really physical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really detaching itself mm-hmm. from the black boarding that's painted around it. Red Square, that's a rather older painting, like 2007.
Yes, yeah, early work.
Already, mm-hmm. yeah. I would have thought that it would be something made with different material, that it would perhaps be a tempera or something,
mm-hmm.
like a tempera, because it's so matte, but it's not.
Now, well, this kind of tempera quality I can create using the polyurethane and pigment. I can get it very dry looking. And so for a while, I even referred to them as temperas because they had that quality. But then it was confusing because then people always attached egg to that. And it's not egg. I did do egg temperas early on, but they were...
We're not all painters. Yeah. So I have my technical limitations. so I'm not surprised that people would have thought so reading tempera. But what's so particular about this painting is that it's red and black, which is almost, it's a very known combination. Mm-hmm. I see one here in the painting of Martevieri,
mm-hmm.
but it's also has also got a bit of violence to it. I was playing soccer for a team that was playing black and red.
Okay.
And as a child, I experienced it always as a bit of sort of harsh combination.
Uh-huh.
But when you start looking, then you see that the black isn't black, but it's sort of charcoaly, velvety.
A little blue in it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's so much movement and depth in it already, but also the red. The red isn't throwing itself at you, which often happens and easily happens with mm-hmm. red. Mm-hmm. But it's this calm presence, perhaps retained also by the slight grid mm-hmm. on top of it. Mm-hmm. What do you think when you're designing, thinking of making such a painting? Do you really think of the presence that it needs to have in advance?
No, it's something that I find. I mean, if I had looked at that painting and decided I didn't want it to be red, I would have painted over it and reconfigured it using the same forms, use the same border, use the same grid, but I could have changed the color. The beauty of the way I work is that it is eminently changeable like that, and I do that now and then. I really do change the color.
So you could have changed the color,
yeah.
not just the warmth or the tone, or...
There's no way of going into the red without also going over the outer edge and over the grid. You can't, isolate mm-hmm. parts within. You have to do the entirety. This is kind of the beauty of all of this. It's all becomes part of it. So I'm sure that I painted that red again and again and again and reestablished the border and then reestablished the red and did the grid, and it all began to surface simultaneously, but it would have gone in and out of itself a number of times before it arrived. So there's no way to go into the red without going over the whole thing.
Yeah. So it has different layers and different phases of development.
That's right. And then that can be dramatic change or it can be just subtle change.
Yeah. Something not mentioned up till now is signature. So there is signature, there is unmistakably these works are works by Winston Wirth because of the quality they have, but you don't see the hand in the surfaces that are painted. You see these lines that are very lively, and so there's different layers working upon each other, but you hardly see any tracing and you said markings, etc. So you work in such a way that you want color to express itself through the limitations that you give it, mm-hmm. sitting on a grid, mm-hmm. but without any other disturption. But at the same time, there's a sort of openness to accident.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, this is something that's not designed by you, but I get the impression that's something that just came along working.
Yeah, no, it's all in the exploration, as I say, yeah. Just keep exploring and mixing and changing and finding things that are there. If you keep the format simple, you can find everything.
Yeah, but because that's what happens now. I mean, you explored the grid in so many ways, and each time...
I feel like I've only begun
what's
possible.
Yeah, because there's this interaction mm-hmm. between grid and color, and I don't know about grids, but color is really infinite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, wide open,
You said yesterday when we met that you have more pigments than you can use in two lifetimes.
Yes.
But at the same time, that's also symbolical for what color is. It's always, even if you would have less, it's always beyond you, color.
And in our technically, new pigments are being created all the time. Hundreds of new pigments just in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the possibilities just become endless, and it's quite interesting. And I'm very happy to have Georg Kramer as a friend, and so I have a very good contact with Kramer Pigments and can get my pigments very easily and keep my supplies full. And every now and then when Georg would like come to an opening of mine, he would bring with him a couple of new pigments that he would bring as a little gift.
To share the joy of color.
Yeah, yeah. And we would trade too, which was also nice. I would trade a drawing for, you know, a little bit of credit at the store.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's a real pleasure.
Yeah. Do you have different phases that you work on paper and then on painting? And do you work on several works at the same time?
I do like to keep a few things going at once, yeah, because they trade with each other different, you know, qualities and impulses from one give me ideas for another, and so I like to work on multiple things, and I do quite a bit in the world of painting as opposed to drawing on multiple panel groupings of panels. So there's always this interaction between the colors and the multiple panels, which are part of one work.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this multi-panel works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they have, many of them have borders, and the borders also act like lines in the way that they can change and give off light and change the light and act within each other.
But they open up differently to the environmental light.
Sure.
Because yeah, they're absolutely surrounded by space.
Yeah, no, and
it's, which is different than a grid on a plane. Yeah.
Well, if you in the gallery, the light is fixed. If you put them into a space where the light is changing, like sunlight is coming in at certain times of day and is behind you, the grids can really jump across the room and greet you.
Yeah.
I mean, because they are they're moving to the light behind you.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
They have that ability.
Yeah, yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But with the multi-panel work, there's also, let's say, more physical presence as in they're more object.
Yeah, yeah, very much so, yeah. And
so that's that gives them a certain solidity, I might say.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it's true of, I work a lot with these panels made of poplar, solid poplar, so they have a real physical quality to them. And I group them together so that they interact very readily with each other. And also the spacing between them becomes a grid.
Yeah, yeah. Because you work on quite different materials, because I also saw that you paint on slate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, slate shingles.
Yeah.
And I also mount them using the holes that come with the slate to attach them to the roof. I use them to hang the slate. And again, that sort of quality of the material and how the color interacts with the material itself. And it also denies from me the borders and lines because of the material quality of the slate, the surface.
The qualities. Accidents.
So it leaves me with
irregularities.
A single color. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me as well. Yeah.
Do the pigments behave themselves differently on the different surfaces?
Well, with the slate, for instance, which has got all of the structure, when light hits it at certain angles, you can see the structure because there's the reflections reflections and shadows that happen on the surface, and that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So your works like emanate into space, but you also told me that you cooperated with your wife, choreographer, mm-hmm. and that you made stage designs.
I called them spatial designs.
Spatial designs.
Yeah. They were paper that was large sheets that were painted and colored and made to reflect, hold light, hold more light than anything around them, and reflect that light slightly. So that, and then they could hang in the space, and she could move around them, through them.
As a dancer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in those earlier works that we did perform at the Dia Foundation in Manhattan, she worked a lot with a musician.
Yeah, what's the name of your wife?
Susan Osberg.
Susan Osberg, yeah. Yes.
And the musician is Malcolm Goldstein. And what he played the violin, and it was always like a different soundings. And so he called his music soundings, plural. And that's where I decided to make the reference to the painting in the show.
Yeah, but do these interventions, have they influence on the way you work in your studio?
To a degree, yes, it does hang over. And I've done installations that are fixed in galleries, which use panels that are attached to the wall and very special lights on them. And so they would be run on a program that moved the light very slowly, one light through another on the panel, so that it was really contained directly there. So it was a light square, really, cast no shadow, and it was just on the surface. The surface was prepared to hold the light more and give it more refraction, more light in it. And so those squares changed gradually, and as the one color moved through the other, all of those indeterminate colors between the two would be experienced. Yeah. Slowly. So it moved so slowly you could hardly see it change.
Right.
But it was an experience.
Seeing your work, it always made me think of this exchange between Alexander Calder and Piet Mondrian.
Uh-huh.
Calder sometimes visited, or a few times visited, Mondrian, and they spoke to each other. And Calder proposed to make a dynamic version of one of his paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, like, yeah, but they're already dynamic. They're already fast, Mondrian said.
They're already fast?
Yeah. They don't need anything. and he was thinking, obviously, of the dynamics of his painterly interventions, mm-hmm. which is also what's happening here. They're silent presences, but at the same time there's dynamics to them in different layers, and you can almost choose which one of the presences you want to have looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different ways of looking at a single painting, also the works on paper. Here in this show, and that's something remarkable, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's not how you think them when you make them.
No, that's for the viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for the viewer.
Yeah. But coming from this conversation, it seems as if Winston Roth is just working in his studio on panels and on paper, and he is playing around with his colors, and sometimes he accepts what he sees and sometimes he just works through.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a bit too open, isn't it?
Well, I like to keep it open. I do. I think it's openness for me within these structures. It helps me to keep it more open. I don't have to be all over. I can be within. And within, I find all this room to move, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, so the structures and the rigidity of grids.
Yeah. The simplicity of them.
And the simplicity of them,
yeah.
Because you open them up and there's a sort of play around the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And with the color layer, that gives the color layer freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gives me freedom to find it. Because the grid is there.
And yeah.
It's just something I can stick with when I'm working.
So you're not looking at expressing something, but you're looking at what, listening almost to what the colors have to say it to you.
Yes, yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, exploring the pigments, yeah. Exploring the color and getting a feel for it is really important. Yeah, getting the feel of it. And that comes to me as I work.
Yeah, I think that's the word, isn't it?
Yeah.
For your work.
Yeah.
Because that it's related to this sensory event that it is when you work on them and when I look at them.
Yeah.
Which is a gift.
Well, I will quickly refer back to when I was working with my wife, Susan, and working in the theater. And when we talk about sensory experience, there was this really dynamic, theatrical quality to it that was really kind of exciting. And it was outside of the studio, which was also interesting to me. And it was a period of our life when we worked together, and we now work separately. But it was a really dynamic time, and I think I carry a lot of that with me as well.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Winston Ruff, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you for the conversation.
Yeah. Your show will be up until the 18th of May in Gallery Sleeuwen. Thank you for this conversation, and thank you for listening.